Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the MLB Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome back once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We've got a good show lined up for you guys today. Dana Lane, as always, is going to come in. We're going to go down the Vegas lane. We're going to get the Rebel Report. We're going to get a pretty interesting update on the first mock expansion draft that was done by the Las Vegas Knights. And a little bit more on the new hires and how things are going with the Knights franchise. And then following that, we've got Ian Reed coming in. He is from The Last Word on Sports, and he covers the Sharks and NHL news in general. And we're going to be talking with the young guns in the Pacific Division, all the talent coming up in Phoenix and Edmonton, and where he sees those franchises headed as they kind of pace each other on their way, struggling up the Pacific Division ladder, if you will. So we got a pretty good show for you today. Chris, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a great show. Now I guess we get back to our Around the League segment, and I guess we have to kick it off with a pretty good debut for Mr. Auston Matthews, the number one pick of last year's draft, I would say.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up to go back to doing the Around the League to open up the conversation on the show, because it was always a lot of fun. We could pick and choose whatever cool topics were going on, suspensions, hits, injuries, fantastic debuts by number one overall picks from Arizona. Anything we want to talk about, anything that's interesting, we get to do in the first segment. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's good to get back to that instead of, you know, just jumping right in and hitting the interview real hard. We'll take a few minutes and talk about Mr. Matthews there. I kind of, first goal, okay. Second goal, okay. You know, hat trick, I put out on Twitter on our account. I was like, now this is getting silly. And then, goal number four. And then in typical Leafs fashion, they go on to lose the game in overtime. One of the things about that night that really struck me, and it wasn't his four goals, it was his demeanor and his willing to take responsibility for that last goal. You know, it could be certainly confused, or not confused, it could certainly be excused if the kid scores a hat trick in his first NHL goal and he goes into some crazy Nile Yakupov type celebration, or and he never lost his cool. The moment was never too big for him. As a matter of fact, when they dished the puck out to him as he was coming down the slot for his hat trick goal, he didn't jump up and down and celebrate himself. He pointed at his teammate the whole way over into the glass, telling his teammate, "Good pass, good job," and certainly, you know, kept his composure the whole time. And then the first things out of his mouth in the post-game interview was, you know, the reporter I saw, she was like, "Oh, you know, your first game, you have four goals. What's it feel like?" The first words he said was, "It's definitely my fault we lost that game. I lost my man in overtime, and that's something I have to work on." didn't take any credit, didn't gloat in the moment, absolutely took responsibility for taking the wrong turn up at the blue line there, and his man beat him back to the puck and got the game winner, and he absolutely owned that moment way before he wanted to talk about any of the four goals he scored. And I think those two instances, more than anything else, tell you all you need to know about Auston Matthews.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I kind of saw the same thing in the post game, and I think this guy is going to be the complete package on and off the ice in terms of skill, ability, winning attitude, leadership, the whole nine yards. Toronto got a heck of a player with Auston Matthews, no doubt. But I guess then we have to move on to the injury bug, which
hold on just a second. I don't know if there's been any nicknames out there for Auston Matthews yet, but I want to put mine in the hat real quick. You've got the gunslinger who comes out of the saloon with four blasts in his opening night, and he's from Arizona. So I don't know if you can call him anything but the Arizona Kid. So I'm just going to put that out there. It's my own little nickname for the guy. He's the Arizona Kid. I like the Southwest reference. I like the desert hockey roots and background. And he's more than willing to talk about how if it wasn't for the Phoenix Coyotes, he'd be a baseball player. So that there is something to be said for expanding the game in desert hockey if you can bring a talent like that out. So I'm just going to put the Arizona Kid out there, and that's my nickname for him. But, yeah, we do have an injury bug that's been going around. What do we got? Quick, and that could be – I mean, we might not see him. If he has surgery on it, we might not see him this year. It is a groin in the same place that his previous groin injury that caused him to miss 2 to 3 months last time around. Don't know how long the Kings can stick with Zach Coffin, Budaj. I've been wanting to see Peter Budaj back. He had an amazing year in the AHL last year, and I thought for sure that somehow he would get picked up by a team to come back into the NHL. But it didn't happen, and he was fortunately for the Kings, he was back in Ontario and able to be recalled. But how long do you think they can go with that tandem, given we talked with JD Styles last week about the depth on the blue line and the depth, you know, third, fourth liners, which is historically where the Kings team defense could wear down the opponents. It's just not there this year. How long do they stay afloat in that Pacific Division with that goaltending tandem?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I actually just wrote an article at Last Word on Hockey about the Kings, and, there's a lot to be concerned with from an age standpoint, the games played, mileage standpoint, salary cap farm system, and that was before this injury happened. He is a tremendous goalie. Nothing against the other guys. I think the other guys can be very fine backup goalies, but I think that's what they are. And if he can be out the next, at least the next 3 or 4 months. I mean, the Kings are now a team. So, I don't know. It's not easy to trade for a goaltender. I don't know where the answer could possibly lie, to be honest with you. Then there's the whole salary cap consideration in terms of what the guy makes, so what the guy's cap number is, finding the right trade value. So it's going to be a challenge for Dean Lombardi. I mean, on a small trade level, you know, over here with the Islanders, they're carrying three goaltenders, one of which is J.F. Berube, who they claimed off the Kings last year. And there has been, I've been reading some rumors that the Kings would like to get him back, but, you know, to what extent of they'd be willing to give up, because carrying three goalies is not the easiest thing to do. But the Islanders are really high on Berube, so they just don't want to give him away, or, you know, even for a decent, pretty good draft pick. So I don't know where the Kings go from here. I'm not sure where the goalie market really is. And if Quick it winds up being out for the whole year, I know they're not in the Central, and I know they're not in the Metropolitan, but I think it's a jump ball for that third spot in the division.
I don't think they make the playoffs if Quick is out and they don't make a move. I'll say that right now. And I don't think bringing in Berube is the answer. I think that's bringing in more of what you already have with Zatkoff and Peter Budaj.
I agree.
If you're going to go for a goalie, you're going to start picking over guys that are going to be free agents at the end of the year. You're going to be going for, I mean, what's been Bishop's trade value? The farther into it we go, the harder it is to move him.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if the Kings. Go ahead.
I did read one rumor with the Flyers. Now, they have Steve Mason and Michael Norvirth, both of who are free agents at the end of the year. So from that standpoint, too, the Kings wouldn't be in a situation where they even locked up even more with the salary cap. And, you know, possibly would they be willing to trade one of their two goalies to the Kings in either Mason or Michael Norvirth. So that is one rumor I did read. To throw out there what they would have to give up for one of those guys, that I don't know. But I don't know how you feel about those two guys.
I think that would be a step up over Berube, although I am a Berube fan. When you guys got him last year, you were texting me, and what do I think of him? And I'm very high on him as a prospect, but not as a guy who, as you said, the Kings are a win-now team. And age is catching up to him, and that Berube is not the guy who is going to be a win-now goalie. As far as Mason and Neuwirth go, if I had a pick, I'd take Mason over Neuwirth. I think with the right defense and in front of him that he could probably maybe come back to some of his form he showed as a rookie. I wouldn't be – and that plays into my go after some goalies that are free agents now. Going to be UFAs at the end of the year philosophy of what they might be able to do looking to replace Quick in the short term. And then you can send Berube back, and Zatkoff is under $1 million cap hit, so maybe he's someone you could send the other way. Or maybe they want Budaj the other way and Zatkoff stays as the backup. So interesting, though. And we got Eichel out. Moving on to the Sabres, and you know, there's another dude we didn't talk about, but you know, that Sidney Crosby guy took a concussion in practice, and I saw someone tweet a picture of him skating this morning, but Eichel, let me ask you this: those two guys, which comes better to maintain even keel with their superstar out, Sabres or Penguins?
Well, the Penguins, are, you know, have an established, you know, deep team. They still have a couple of superstars in Phil Kessel and, you know, Yanni Malkin. And not to mention more stable in terms of their play in net. So I have to go Pittsburgh. It's just a little scary in terms of, you know, Crosby a few years ago had, over a course of, I want to say about 12 months, two horrible concussions.
I remember at that point in time
I was, and he really has been okay since, which is pretty miraculous. But so I think, and anyone who studies athletes with concussions in any of these sports, especially the physical sports, you know, once you get one, you're more prone to get the next and so on and so forth. So
yeah,
a bit of a slippery slope. So they need to be extra careful. So let's just say, hypothetically speaking, he was ready to come back November 1st. You know what? Have him come back 3 weeks later. I mean,
yeah,
literally, like,
100%.
Be that extra anal about it. And, you know, the hockey's a long season. The Penguins are going to make the playoffs. And that's the tack. And then at that point, you know, cross your fingers. Because I saw Pat LaFontaine, the last concussion that ended his career is when he bumped into his own man at center ice,
yep,
fell on his rump, and then the shock from falling on his behind caused the concussion, and then that's how his career ended. So,
yeah.
I mean, to put it in perspective.
I will say I disagree with you a little bit on that he's been fine ever since. I don't think Crosby had been back to being Crosby until the middle of last season. I think even going back to the playoffs the year before, and all through last season, I don't – and I, you know, 2 years ago when he was coming back – Tom was hosting the show with me at the point, and I flat out said that Sidney Crosby wasn't the best player in the game anymore, and the concussions had taken their toll, and the puck in the mouth, and those things aren't pretty, and I finally started to see Sidney Crosby that I want to see last year, and he there's still, even then, not quite, but enough to where I was like, okay, Crosby's back to being Crosby again, and he's still the best player for at least a little bit longer. And then what I saw of him in the World Cup, he was going to come out and get off to a terrific start this season, and then he gets hurt in practice, and it's very disappointing to me to see that happen. And like you said, it's concerning on not just this level, but you wonder how hard he got hit, or what caused it in practice. Is it going to be one of those things that extends and extends out again? And we just, as hockey fans, we just cross our fingers and wait and see on that. Now, since Eichel sprained his ankle, and they said he could be out, what'd they say, 2 months on Eichel, maybe 6 to 8 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, again, they're always very cryptic in the NHL about these injuries, but I've heard that. I would say this, if Eichel comes back under 6 weeks, Sabre fans have to be pretty happy with that.
And then following that up, Evander Kane goes into the boards, breaks 3 ribs, and he's out indefinitely. So, was it you that has Buffalo as the wild card, or was it the...
I did.
That was you.
I did.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I'll give you a chance right now to get off the hook on that.
No. I'm going to stick with my pick, and they're going to have to, just hold steady, And to be honest with you, with Evander Kane, I kind of looked at him, even though they need him to contribute almost like a bonus. To me, he'll wind up probably missing games. I felt going in the year that he would miss some games due to injury and probably score his 20 goals. But the 1 year, that unbelievable year he had, a couple, I guess now it's like 3-4 years ago, Winnipeg, and people thought he was going to be a superstar. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Eichel, obviously, with his ankle situation is a real rough one. So hopefully the Ryan O'Reilly, Kyle Poso and folks can, pick it up. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Those 20 goals are much needed goals in Buffalo. I we did our show, and I thought that the Evander Kane with the pending charges and those distractions aren't what you need to have around all the young talent that those guys have coming up. But as long as he's on the roster and as long as he's there, they were counting on him heavily for offensive contribution. To have that taken away after the gut punch of Eichel getting hurt, I can't see them holding that fort down. If they do, they'll surprise me, put it that way. I think your wild card pick just went out the window, sir.
We'll see. It's a long season.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It is. I guess that's the injury bug. Anything else strike you in the first week as interesting?
It's funny. Everyone I talked to felt like by far Vancouver was the the team that was is going to be the biggest
one.
Favorite to get the number one pick.
Yeah,
and they won their first two games, but again, it's a long year. Not that I have anything against Vancouver, but we'll have to see how that plays out. But yeah, I mean, at this point in the year, you just try to get off to a good start and see what happens after that.
Is that the enjoy it while it lasts Vancouver segment that we just covered right there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up. That was us going around the league and just having a little round table spitball there on stuff that jumped out in the first week. And we're going to be kicking things off as usual with Dana Lane from Dana Lane Sports, KSHP 1400 AM here in Las Vegas, co-host of the Vegas Hockey Hotline with Brian Blessing, and also the play-by-play voice of the UNLV Skating Rebels. Dana, hello, sir.
How are you, sir? Good to talk with you again. How was your week?
It was good. It was good. We had a little trip to California for a family, my brother's 50th birthday. So we had a good feast on Saturday night there at a real nice place in Orange County. So still trying to recover from that. Every time I introduce you, it seems like your titles and monikers just keep extending out. Well, you're getting to be a very busy man, sir.
I am, and that's funny you say that because during the summertime, I told my wife, I said, geez, you know, I'm not doing anything hockey. You know, it was like July or something. I said, man, I haven't done anything hockey related in like 2 days. I mean, I was just kind of bouncing around the walls here in the house, and now she never sees me, and I'm doing the same thing, but for the opposite reason, because I got too much on my plate. So always happy to do it, though.
Yes, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Well, let's kick off. The Rebels had last weekend off, so give me the Rebel report for this week. Who do we got this weekend? Where are they at? And so on and so forth.
Yeah, two games this week against BU. That's Boston U. They'll be at Sobey Arena this week. They will have practice tomorrow at the Las Vegas Ice Center, and then again on Thursday at Sobey Arena. And then next week, Long Beach State comes in, and that's going to be interesting because I saw the younger kids play the Storm at the Ice Center, and man, they are big kids, and I wonder if that equates to their college team. But yeah, they're jacked and ready to play. They did a couple team building events this week. They had a wiffle ball tournament, and I think they went out and played golf one day and just, you know, try to stay focused and try to stay healthy. That's the main thing for them. And they have, you know, they look like they're going to be close to 100%, which they haven't been since game one.
Right. We had the undisclosed injury to one of the goaltenders. I'm going to try and stay true to the mysterious hockey injury report and not mention which one or who, but how is that coming along?
Well, I guess I'm not very good at the mystery, but Terry Martin's the one with the fractured the tip of his finger. He had the pin taken out. He's still extremely sore, so he's probably not going to see any action this weekend. I would think Long Beach would probably be, you know, the quickest he could see action, but they're very they're fine with Feast and Idison behind them. So, I mean, to me, it doesn't matter. All three of those guys are interchangeable. I think they're solid in goal, no matter who plays.
All right. Well, I'll probably see you at least one of the games this weekend. It'll be cool to go see BU play for sure.
Yes, sir.
I caught the very end yesterday of your conversation with the president of hockey operations, and he was talking about having to go back to Cleveland for the AHL banner raising ceremony and then coming here for 2 days and then going back for the Cleveland Cavaliers ring and banner ceremony. It sounded like it was a real interesting conversation. I'm sorry I missed the vast majority of it. What impressions of the new president of hockey ops did you take away from that interview, preferably the parts I did not I wasn't able to hear?
I thought Kerry was really forthcoming. I mean, one of the questions that I asked him was, you know, what part of your resume, because my goodness, if you look at his resume, I mean, it is all over the place. But I said, you know, what part of your resume do you think is the gleaming part? I mean, the part that pushed Bill Foley over. And he honestly said, you know, he thought that the part about, you know, his time down in Carolina and what he did down there with the Hurricanes being in charge of sales and ticketing. And I tried to kind of push him towards Dallas a little bit because I just thought that, you know, with a brand new franchise, not only, you know, being brand new, but also one in the desert, I thought that was kind of equates a little bit better to what we might be doing out here in Vegas. But he seemed very proud of what they did in Carolina, and Kerry Bobolt certainly comes here with a wide variety of things on his resume.
Yeah, no question. One of the things that I did catch at the tail end of that was he said one of the important aspects that he brings to the job is that he knows what he doesn't know, and he's freely able to acknowledge the things that he doesn't know, that he's not good at, and he's perfectly willing to hire the help and get the people around him that can do the things that he can't do, and that all through his career, whether it was with the hockey, whether it was with the NBA, that he's always put himself in a team-first mindset when he comes into the office. And I think that's, I mean, that's right in line with what Mr. Foley said he was looking for when he was looking for a general manager and other front office personnel. I think that might have been part of what puts him over the top with Mr. Foley, no?
Yeah, I mean, certainly so. I mean, the rings that he is going to be supporting after this week is also something that probably sways Foley a lot, too. I mean, he not only won a championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers, but they also won one with in the American Hockey League with the Monsters. So, you know, he certainly has won championships in multiple sports. He was also part of the Cleveland Gladiators, the former Las Vegas Gladiators, and he was part of that organization as well. So he's got his hands in a lot of things. And what I like about the staff so far is, yeah, they hired hardcore hockey guys to start with, but what they're doing now is they're really rounding it out with guys that maybe have a toe outside of hockey, even though it's still in professional sports in some cases. Some cases it's not. But I think that this staff is well-rounded and covers every aspect that you might want out of the staff.
Interesting hire yesterday, said exactly along the lines of what you're talking about. For those that haven't gone to the site yet, General Fanager is now shut down. The guy who was keeping track of salary caps and actually had put together the best mock draft expansion draft app in his site that I'd come across, and I've done a bunch of them, was hired away from his website and is now a member of the Las Vegas Knights.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's one of those hires where you just kind of go, okay, I like that a little bit. My dogs are going to bark there in a second, so I apologize, go in another room. But, yeah, it's one of those hires where you just kind of go, okay, that's nice. I mean, we got to call into him to get him on the show, and you know, we talked about this today on the show. I mean, I really want to see, you know, what is his role and how is it defined? I know he's got a job title. But what exactly does that mean? And so I love these guys that kind of come from outside the box thinking, which he certainly does, and we'll see how that equates to what he's able to bring to Las Vegas.
Chris?
Hey, Dan, it's Chris. Yeah, we've got a couple of questions for you. So what's I'm going to get to the expansion draft in a second or thoughts on it. But first, what's George McPhee been up to these last couple of weeks? Imagine him and staff have started the scouting, which there is an immense amount of work to be done with that for both the expansion draft as well as the amateur draft, which he views as very critical for the team's future. So what can you tell us about any news with Mr. McPhee and company?
Well, basically what we had George McPhee on the show about a week ago, and he was facing the pool while we were interviewing him, so we didn't make a lot of eye contact with him. But the one thing that he did say, and of course last week was his first mock draft, and so basically what they wanted to do is not only, you know, get the potential players on a board and see what a draft might look like, but also each one of those scouts are assigned to a cluster of teams, and basically they just kind of go around the room and they get everybody's opinion. And of course, they have, you know, their capologists in there, and they talk about what a potential draft would look like next June. And so the funny thing about what he said was, or the great thing about what he said, when Brian asked him what was the, you know, result of the first draft, he said, man, if this is the team that we end up with, we're going to make the playoffs. And he said that, I mean, he is not a man that says things like that without any kind of facts behind them. So I get it. You know, that got us kind of excited for sure. But certainly that's what he's focused on right now. And they're going to do two or three, if not four, mock drafts before we can see the next expansion draft.
Now, Dana, have you done yourself? I know it's kind of hard because in some certain circumstances, just my own self, I've talked ad nauseum with people over the last few months since Vegas got announced, especially with certain goaltenders, and I read in one place, well, this guy doesn't have to be protected, or this guy has to be protected. So it's a little confusing, I know, here
on Long Island, there was some confusion with one of the young Islanders and Ryan Pulock, who does have to be protected, which really takes an impact on how they're going to do their protection list. If they're going to protect four defensemen, for instance. But do you have a couple of names you're kind of eyeballing that you know is going to be, you know, you feel pretty confident that they could wind up being in the expansion draft that would be great fits for the Vegas franchise?
Yeah, you know, when this first came out, I mean, the first thing that we all did was, you know, put together these mock expansion drafts, and of course it was under rules that wouldn't apply to an expansion draft today. I think though, for me, I mean, I think I kind of just kind of sat back and said, well, let's really do one after the trade deadline, because, you know, for instance, and believe me, it's as fun as it seems, it's a lot of work, and you know while you're doing it that this is, you know, if you hit, you know, 10%, you've done a great job. But, you know, you can't help, though, but to think about the goaltending situation. I know people were high on Vasilevsky. I know people were high on Murray. But, you know, like we talked about on the show today, I said, you know, okay, we were high because of what they did in the playoffs, the time of year where people are, you know, really focused on blocking pucks and really just giving everything they had. Let's see how that equates potentially to the regular season. And, you know, of course, Matt Murray is hurt already. And, you know, we've seen Vasilevsky once. And I'm just not sure if you go through the goaltenders, if these guys are the ones that pop up first. I think you have an interesting situation in Philadelphia. I think you have an interesting, you know, situation in Tampa for sure. And now what's going to happen with Los Angeles? I mean, are they going to decide to make a move depending on what Jonathan Quick decides to do? There's going to be so many. I mean, I talked to Lindy Ruff last week and I asked him about the goaltending situation there, you know, and I'm all thinking, you know, I can't believe you guys haven't made a move. You know, that's a question I really want to ask him, but he seems pretty happy with the goaltending situation there. But, you know, as much as you say, oh, you must really like Lettinen, and we say Niemi gets, you know, the first two games. So, you know, for me, it's just kind of a wait and see thing. I mean, you always have kind of a wish list, but, you know, for me, it's a focus on goaltending. It's a focus on coaching. And, you know, you see the guys that might be available coaching wise. I mean, I hate to even say it, and not that I don't know him personally or anything, but man, you look at that schedule coming up, and it looks like John Tortorella is going to be available pretty quick.
Okay.
Well, actually, real quick, I have one last question about the expansion process. If you can confirm. Now, my understanding is after their expansion selection, Vegas has to be, I believe, is it 60% at the salary cap ceiling after the expansion draft? And do you know how it works if they wind up taking someone who's going to be a pending UFA or in a few days at that point in time, or someone who's going to be an offer? How all those little
machinations work? Yeah, that's a great question, because we asked George that as well. And, you know, they have to be at 60%. And, you know, basically, if we pick somebody that under that scenario, you know, that we would essentially have their rights. But that's where things kind of get murky a little bit, because we still haven't had a definitive date on when teams can start negotiating with Las Vegas for players, or, you know, saying, hey, look, don't take this guy, and we'll give you this. I know that our great writer here, Steve Karp, kind of talked to Bill Daly after the initial announcement, and he said June 1st, but since that time, I haven't had any kind of confirmation on that date whatsoever. So there are some gray areas in there, and you know, these are the reasons for these mock drafts to kind of walk their way through this. To be honest with you, that stuff makes my head hurt. But you know, I try to focus on, you know, what I think for what the potential is for what kind of goaltender we're going to get here, and obviously we're focused on coaching. But those are all really, really good questions, and I'm not even sure that George McPhee knows all the answers to all the rules.
Probably not yet. Well, Dana, that we're right up against it. Man, I got to let you go for the week. It's great to talk to you again, as always, sir. All right, that was Dana Lane. Okay, coming down to Vegas Lane, as we'll usual, every week at this time. All right, we'll do it again next
talking
week.
Talking UNLV hockey, a little insight into George McPhee and the mock draft the Vegas franchise did over the last weekend. I was talking with Chris just now, and they did hire the cat that ran General Fanature, and that site is now down. So I just off the top of my head, I was wondering if when they did their mock draft, they pulled up the General Fanature site. As for me, it's been the best site to do mock expansion drafts with. It was really well put together, really, really easy to work through. And I wonder if they just went through his site and said, you know what, this guy knows what he's doing. We need to get him on board, because yesterday he was hired, his site's down, and off they go. So pretty interesting, quick little hire. I hadn't heard anything in the rumor mill about looking at him or anybody.
I have to say, though, Mark.
Yeah?
I'm a little insulted, because we are, you know, co-hosting the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We bring incredible insights, and no one, our phones didn't ring. So I'm a little disappointed there.
I think they're saving us for bigger and better things. We're still getting the word out.
Okay.
We can't be behind the scenes.
Okay.
We got to be front and center. So as soon as they announce their media package, I'm sure they'll have a spot for us. Or probably not.
All right, we'll be at the draft, babe.
All right, well, anyway, let's bring in our next guest. We've got Ian Reed here from Last Word on Hockey. He writes for NHL News and also covers the Sharks a little bit. You can follow him at iReed, R-E-I-D, I-R-E-I-D, Pucknology. Kind of butchered that. At iReed Pucknology. I think that came out a little bit better. Ian, welcome in, buddy. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
We wanted to have you on board because early in the season, I guess there's still hope for everybody. But also, I've been really interested in the talent that the Coyotes and the Oilers, to, I mean, we all know about McDavid, but the young guys that are coming up in the league. I was doing a little homework before the show this week, and I went through last year's draft and this year's draft, and I just looked at the first round. Out of the 2015-16 draft, there's 14 players out of that first round, which obviously is almost half, that have made their NHL debut and actually are probably favorites to stick on their roster this year. And out of this year's first round pick, I got as high as, I want to say, 7 or 8 before I ran out of links to go down the rabbit hole trying to find, you know, dark horses that may have got a game in last year at the end of the year or whatever. But three of those players actually made the club with Arizona this year. Let's start with the Coyotes and their young talent base. They're probably a little bit behind Buffalo as far as the up and coming youngsters, but I think their skill level and upside might be a little bit better than Buffalo. What do you think about that?
I think, honestly, the Coyotes should probably, in my opinion, would be in the top three prospect pools in the league. When you look at just how deep that their prospect pool is going back, I mean, Buffalo's accumulated a lot of talent as well. I don't know where I would put Buffalo as far as, like, you know, where I'd rank them as far as prospect pools go, but I think that you could have a good fight between the Leafs and the Coyotes for the top prospect pool in the league right now.
I agree. When I was looking through the list, one thing that struck me was out of the first 10 picks in both drafts, the Arizona has three starting. And then in that first round, they also got, and I don't know, maybe you heard something in the rumor. How did they get Lawson Krause out of Florida? For a second and a third, I totally missed that deal, and now he made the roster this year in Arizona.
Yeah, that was a summer that kind of it went a little bit under the radar this summer as far as that trade went. The GM there, John Chayka, he's been just, you know, everything that he seems to do is money right there right now. And it was funny because when he first got hired, you know, everyone looked at his age and we all kind of snickered about it. But then, you know, right from the draft on, I can't really think of anything that Chayka's done that I haven't liked for the Coyotes.
I don't know how you get the number 11 overall pick out of a team 1 year from his draft year. I mean, if you're 4 or 5 years down the road and it's time to change scenery, I can dig that. But how do you get Florida? I guess I'll have to get Matt Pryor back on the phone. How do you get Florida on the phone and go, well, let me give you a second and a third for last year's number 11, and the guy says, okay.
They did take Dave Bolin on, Mark, and it was basically a bit of a cap hit. So he signed, I think, for two more years after this year at his cap number's around, what, $4.5-5 million, and they had the cap space. So I think he's healthy again. So at least he started the season, played opening night. So that was a big reason why they were able to get Grouse for second and third round picks.
I think that's a steal, and it might prove to be even more than a steal. And then they have in addition to the kids that just made this year, Jakob Chychrun is made the club on defense. Mm-hmm. But then you throw in Duclair and Domi from last year. How bright is the future? And I know you're a Sharks guy. How soon till the Sharks and Kings and Ducks are looking over their shoulders at these teams?
I mean, the Coyotes, look, you can go down the list on the Coyotes. I mean, the guys that are the young guys that are in the team, like you mentioned, Duclair and Domi, who were there last year, I think, you know, they're only going to get better. And then you look at the guys like Jacob Chychrun, who made the team out of camp. I think that surprised a lot of people. Lawson Crouse, again, you know, from Florida, coming over, he makes the team. You know, and then you've got a guy like Christian Dvorak, who was huge. I mean, London was so stacked last year in the OHL.
So,
you know, he had a big year. You know, and then you take Dylan Strome, who, you know, a lot of people are wondering about, you know, is he a product of McDavid or is he his own guy? And last year in Erie, he proved that, you know, he's his own guy.
Right, for sure.
So, when you look at that, I think the Pacific should be afraid of the Coyotes.
I think in the next couple of years, one thing that I think that they have to do, and I've been, you know, here in Vegas, I've been kind of following these guys as they've been getting drafted and coming up. And one thing they got to do is get rid of, I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just saying they got to get rid of Mike Smith and that $7 million cap hit, and get solid in net again. And maybe a year or two. I'm not putting them in the playoffs this year, but I'm not going to be surprised if they're a wild card team next year. Chris, what do you got for Ian on the Coyotes, bud?
Yeah, I got 3 points here on the Coyotes. Mm-hmm. So, Ian, looking over the Coyotes before the Crouse trade, and I get it, it's a new NHL speed, you know, the way penalties are now called and things and so forth. But, you know, I like the Clayton Keller pick. I thought he would be a great fit for the Devils if he fell to there, but he didn't. But I felt like with Domi and Duclair, not that they're small, but a little undersized, and then they took Keller. So how much do you think, like, picking up a big guy like Krause to go with some of, you know, a little bit of their undersized, if you will, guys, is gonna help this team?
I think a guy like Krause definitely is much needed. Yeah, you definitely need some size in your lineup still. You can't just go all, you know, small guys. I mean, small guys are starting to really take over, but you still need a guy out there that can lay the body good. And I think Krause is good. I thought that Krause went a little high in the draft that year. I thought that he got really, in his draft year, like 2015, I think, was the draft year for Krause.
That's right.
I thought that he got really, really overvalued because of the strong World Junior tournament, which obviously is a small thing of games, but you know, it's one of those places where if you do really well, it can really inflate your draft stock. And I thought that a really big World Junior kind of really inflated his stock a little high, but he's still a heck of a player.
Now, in terms of Chychrun, and it was ironic because to me, when the Red Wings were on the board, and I get it, this is prior to free agency, obviously the draft, so they didn't sign Franz Nielsen, they didn't sign Thomas Vanek. And Datsyuk, I believe, has a $7+ million cap number, even though no one has to pay him this year, obviously, and the last year of his deal. But I guess
he still counts against the cap, though, because it's an over 35 deal.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought Arizona just got a steal, and ironically, to me, Jacob Chychrun was the exact kind of defenseman that Detroit is desperately needs. and especially when you consider his youth. I thought it was, you know, granted they also traded a couple picks down, I believe, late in the second round picks, if you were second or third round picks. But maybe you could talk a little bit about Chychrun, and do you think he'll stay for the whole year in Arizona? And how you felt about
You know, I was surprised to see Chychrun stay. Chychrun, the one thing that's with Chychrun is he's had problems with consistency through his career over in Sarnia. He's been kind of inconsistent, and I think that really hurt his draft stock. I think going in, like when you looked at the draft rankings going into last season, I think Chychrun was probably your top defender that was in the, you know, that he would have ranked out. By the draft, I think he was, you know, where he kind of fell to like the third, fourth guy. I wasn't surprised by that, but I still think that, you know, it's not an over-complex game that Chychrun plays, so I think that could translate to the NHL really easy. But I don't think that I don't know if you keep him up for the whole year. I think you might send him back to Sarnia, because once, as the season drags on, I think that would be, you know, kind of another concern I'd have with the Coyotes this year, is that you have all these kids, and the NHL season is a grind like no other. You've seen players hit a wall. We saw Jared McCann do it in Vancouver, just hit a wall mid-season. So I think just from that perspective, you might want to send Chychrun back down at some point.
And my last question on the Coyotes is, they've compiled a great group of young forwards, a strong group, I think, pretty good group of defensemen. But as Mark alluded to, I don't believe, unless Mike Smith has the fountain of youth. I don't think they have a number one goalie on their NHL roster, and I really don't see one in the prospect pipeline. Am I wrong on that? And if I'm not, is that the Coyotes front office next mission is to find their future number one goalie?
Yeah, absolutely. The Coyotes, for all their strength, I think goaltending is a huge weakness. I like Louis Domingue, but I don't think he's an NHL starter. I think he's more better suited to being an NHL backup. Mike Smith is Mike Smith. You're kind of stuck with that hit. Nobody's going to want that cap hit. But they definitely need to not only move away from Mike Smith when that contract's up, but they need to search for that bona fide number one if they're going to be a contender in the Pacific.
Well, rumor has it that the trade deadline this year is going to be crazy due to a certain expansion draft following the season. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Phoenix, even with Mike Smith on the roster, try and move maybe some of their second-tier assets to a team that's desperate to get something in return for a goalie they may lose come June. And I actually think that, like you said, the new GM's got a lot of tricks up his sleeve down in Arizona, and I might maybe be a little chagrined post-trade deadline at the goalie that could have been a Las Vegas Knight and is now actually an Arizona Coyote. That's I'm kind of holding my breath on that one. Well, let's I wanted to touch just a little bit on what you said a little bit earlier about how it's not unheard of for the younger players hit the wall. We've actually saw that with this Phoenix club last year, who was actually in a playoff spot through December and into early January until the Ducks went on some crazy stupid run and ended up taking the division on the last day of the season. But it looked like, you know, everyone said, oh, it's not going to last. And then October happened. Oh, it's not going to last. And then November happened. And then December happened, and they were still on pace for a wild card or the number three spot in the Pacific. And then, you know, as you get into those dog days of January, then I think Domi and Duclair and some of the other guys probably did hit that wall. But I think they're going to be more – I think they're going to be more able to deal with it, having gone through it last year, and do a better job at sustaining that through this year. Let's jump to Edmonton, because we're going to be a little bit on time here, but I don't want to keep you any longer than you can. We know they have the McDavid, 19-year-old captain. It was an interesting thing I heard on the radio today. From an NHL vet who was talking about that, and he said
He said, yes, it's nice. Back in my time, that wouldn't have happened no matter how good he was. The veterans in the day I played probably wouldn't lend themselves to a 19-year-old captain. What are the 30-year-old guys in the room? I know he's the heir apparent, but is that something that's going to work? And maybe could they have waited a year or two to give him a C?
You know, I think that when it comes to McDavid, they really kind of pushed themselves in a corner. How could you name him the captain of the under-23 team when you have, you know, the Oilers coach there and the Oilers GM there? How can you name him the captain of that under-23 team and then say, yeah, but you're not quite good enough to be the captain of the Oilers? I mean, you couldn't do anything else, really.
Well, I think you had a built-in captain, Milan Lucic, come in that would have taken him through his first three-year deal. And see where it goes from there. But with Lucic there and the experience and the Stanley Cup experience that he has, I think that might have. And I don't know. I'm just spitballing. But I more than half expected Lucic to wear the C for that team. And I can't say I was surprised, but I was a little trepidatious, if you will, about how that played out going forward, because Lucic was absolutely a leader in Boston. He was absolutely a leader in LA, and I think having a guy like that as your leader in Edmonton with all the young kids there would have suited that locker room maybe a little better than having another kid try and be the leadership role.
I think with McDavid, though, I mean, he's really mature. And the other thing with the captaincy, too, is I think the captaincy has changed. Like, what the captaincy means, like, actually means in the room, I think that's really changed over the last couple of decades. You know, I mean, everyone now, you know, no one's going to their captain whenever they have a problem. Now they're probably talking to their agent first before they do anything else. So I think McDavid's a guy that... you know, he's very mature beyond his years. And that's the one thing I've always kind of noticed about him. And he's a player that I've watched from, you know, from junior, being in an OHL city. So I don't really have a problem with him being the captain. I feel like, you know, the Penguins didn't wait too long to give the captaincy to Sidney. You know, Gretzky was the captain on that Oilers team, if I remember correctly, that won all those cups. So
that did happen.
So that doesn't surprise me, and I think that you know, McDavid's mature again, like I said. So he's not going to give you you're not going to have like headlines of off ice shenanigans from McDavid.
Right, he's not Evander Kane or so on and so forth.
Right.
So I looks like Darnell Nurse is going to be there to stay. What can we see about the future? And I know that the Hall trade rubs a lot of people the wrong way, and I didn't like that trade because it's Taylor frickin' Hall. But you had to at some point address the defense, and taking out the price you had to pay for it, Larson comes in, Chris Russell, right? Where does Nurse fit in there? It looks like he's going to stick around now for sure, right?
Yeah, I think Nurse is going to be fine. I think, you know, he's going to have to work his way up the lineup right now. He's going to probably play, you know, third pair of minutes. But, you know, he's a guy. He can move the puck. He can shoot from the point. He plays a pretty, you know, again, a pretty solid defensive game. He can, you know, he can lay the body too. So I think that, you know, he's a guy, he just needs more experience. And defensemen are, you know, they're funny because they take so much time to develop. I mean, yeah, you know, you're going to look at some guys that obviously just come in the league and light it on fire to start. But a lot of defensemen, you know, really don't hit their stride until 23, 24. So I feel that when the Oilers are actually, you know, ready to be a little bit more competitive, I think that Nurse is going to be, you know, front and center in that.
Right. When you have guys like Doughty and like that come in as 18-year-olds and expectations get high. But you're right, traditionally, you know, defensemen can sit till they're 24, 25 before they come up for good. So, Chris, what do you got on the Oilers, bud?
Yeah, I got a couple of questions for Ian, and one of which deals with Darnell Nurse in terms of both Darnell Nurse and Griffin Reinhart. And to me, Ian, you know, the Oilers are at that stage of a, you know, a talented young team, you know, trying to take that next step, which is to become a playoff team. and then be solidified as a playoff team. We've seen teams in recent years, like just out here in the Eastern Conference, the Islanders, the Panthers, do that. Now they're trying to pull to those team franchises to try to take the next step. For me, I think Nurse and Griffin Reinhardt, who the Oilers gave up a lot for, their development is going to be a big key in taking the next couple of steps. How do you feel about that, and how confident are you in both of those guys becoming core players for the Oilers over the next few years?
So, yeah, you know, with Nurse, I have to be careful because I probably get a little biased because I'm from the Sioux, so that's where Nurse played all his junior hockey. So I do have a fondness for him as kind of a fan. But I think, you know, I think Nurse is going to be all right. I think that he can develop into the defenseman they want. They just have to, be careful. They can't just, you know, try and force him up into like the top pair and be like, okay, it's you and Klefbom, get this done. Griffin Reinhardt, on the other hand, is a guy that I have zero faith in right now. Like, I just feel like, you know, this guy, when you look at what's on the Oilers' blue line, like, you would think a guy as highly touted as Griffin Reinhardt once was should be, you know, should have been able to break into this lineup. And the fact that he hasn't, I don't know if he ever does. Like, I'm really concerned about Griffin Reinhardt if I'm an Oilers fan.
Well, that's something. I can understand why you say that. It's hard to believe just not that long ago, it was the fourth overall pick. And obviously the Oilers gave up in the 15 draft, mid-first round pick and early second. The thing that jumped out at me about the Oilers versus the Coyotes is while the Oilers do have their own, you know, talented group of youngsters on their roster, because to be excited about it, like the Coyotes, the Coyotes seem to have a lot more in the pipeline than the Oilers currently do when you go past the main roster. In fact, if you want to use this as one source, the Hockey News and their Future Watch had Griffin Reinhardt as the Oilers' number one prospect. Obviously, I don't think you agree with that, but it seems like the prospect pool at this point in time is a bit thin, and how worrisome is that, and do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think when you contrast the Coyotes with the Oilers specifically, the Coyotes, like, you see some, you see some of their top guys that are starting to break the lineup now, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. If you look at the Coyotes, you know, you're looking at guys that are still either developing or, you know, still in junior, or, you know, you have Clayton Keller who's playing NCAA right now. I think he's going to be, you know, when he makes the jump to pro, he's going to be great. Brandon Perlini is going to be playing for Tucson this year. You know, 45 points with Niagara last year. Nick Merkley had a 90-point season in 2014-15. You know, there's some injury concerns there. But again, you know, this is a guy that they project really high. You know, Connor Garland, who had like 130 points, I think, the last 2 years in the queue. So when you contrast that with the Oilers, it's kind of what you see is what you get. I think when you look at a guy like Jesse Puljujärvi, I think that, you know, he's going to be a good player, but if I was the Oilers, I probably would have made a bigger push to sign Christopher Stieg and let him play in the minors for a year, to be honest. I think there's no shame in, you know, there's no shame in that. And I think that's the problem with the Oilers is that they, you know, they draft these guys and then they put them front and center. And the big problem with the Oilers specifically is that when you look at the previous regime, outside of the obvious first round picks, their drafts were terrible beyond the first round. Like, I think other than Klefbom, if you look through, you know, if you go like, you go to HockeyDB, for example, and just look at their draft history and see how many of their late round picks have just never played an NHL game going back for a long period of time. You know, they also gave up on a guy like Martin Marincin, who's looking okay with the Leafs now. So it's, you know, it's what you see is what you get with the Oilers. They're lucky they have a guy like McDavid, who's obviously heads and feet above, you know, a lot of the names that I've gone through. But beyond that, they're, you know, that's what they have is what's up.
Yeah, just to confirm what you just said, you know, there was a lot of, it's good comparison because back in 08, both the Islanders and the Oilers turned the page in terms of rebuilding. And being, you know, an Islander guy out here writing about them, also about the NHL last word, but, you know, over the last number of years, while it took the Islanders a good period of time in that rebuild, you could see in their system or on the roster all these pieces, and they still have a very strong system with more guys still coming. When you looked at the Oilers during that time, it was few and far between, and they both kind of started at the same point in time. So that has been a huge problem in terms of their drafting, for sure. My last question for you, using these two teams, if I told you, Ian, that one of these teams, I'm not going to say is going to make the playoffs, but it's going to make a big push for a playoff spot for this year, just talking this year now, would you be buying the Oilers or would you be buying the Coyotes, and which one and why?
You see, and that's the thing. I think because I would probably go with the Oilers because I like Cam Talbot a little bit better than I like Mike Smith. And, you know, the Oilers have McDavid, and McDavid, the huge X factor. McDavid is the kind of player that you wonder if he can, you know, if he can put that team on his back and drag it in. You also have, you know, another good player that the Oilers do have right now is Leon Draisaitl, who I have, like, a huge man crush on, you know, because he's just an amazing player, Draisaitl. So I think when you look at the guys that they have, if they can stay healthy, I think that they can really do something. You look at the Pacific Division this year, you know, Quick's out for 3 to 4 months. So what that does to the LA Kings, I don't know. The Anaheim Ducks, they're off to a poor start. You don't want to read too much into that, but, you know, they went through just like a coaching change and they brought in Randy Carlyle, and I don't know how that's supposed to make them better. So you couldn't, you know, wouldn't be shocking to see with the Quick injury, with the Ducks coaching changes, that, you know, these teams might slide, some of these teams that shouldn't necessarily have a chance.
Yeah, I think with where the Oilers are now is I agree with you on that. They're more conducive to push. I think we're – do I still have that in front of me? No, I don't. We were talking with Dana Lane, one of the sports handicappers here in town, good friend of the show, and he had mm-hmm. he had Edmonton at 87.5 points for the season and – Arizona at 72.5 points for the season. So I don't think that's going to last very long, though. I told him if it was me going to the window, I would take the under on Edmonton and the over on Arizona, and I think I might cash both those tickets.
Yeah, and you absolutely might. I like the Coyotes. The important thing for the Coyotes now is, aside from finding a goaltender, is they just need to be patient.
Yep.
They have all the pieces there. They just need to be patient. Where the Oilers, They have nothing to be patient for because they're drafted, they're late round picks. Like, you know, like just being a Sharks fan specifically, like, you know, a guy like Joe Pavelski was found in the 7th round. The Oilers have, like, they don't have any of those late round hits. Like, everything's been miss after the 2nd round. So, like I said, with the exception of Klefbom, I didn't mind their draft this last season. I think that they took some interesting players that, you know, that'll probably make a difference at some time. But So it's rough there. They're going to have to do more to try and patch this up now.
I was going to say, goodness gracious, if you tell Oiler fan they got to be patient again, wow. That's, you know, with McDavid and the new arena, I would think, you got to give Shirelli a couple years and a couple drafts and a couple years to see if that kind of bottom mid. I mean, John, like you said, Jonathan Quick's a 3rd round pick. Wayne Simmons was a 3rd round pick. You can get your superstars in the 1st round, but your meat and potato, 2nd, 3rd liners, 2nd pair defense come out of those 3rd, 4th rounds. And if you're just consistently missing on those over and over again, you're going to be the Edmonton Oilers for 10 years. So you got to give Shirelli a couple years and a couple drafts and then a couple more years. But man, I have a hard time looking Oiler fan in the eye and go, hey, patience, man. But with Phoenix, on the other hand, the patience is going to be the key. You can't lose faith in the direction where they're going. I think Maloney, short list for the Vegas job. I can't understand why he's not working in the NHL right now. And if the next general manager job opens, he doesn't get hired, I'm going to be shocked.
Yeah, because especially considering the shoestring budget that he ran that team on for, you know, through all those years with all the, you know, with all the trouble with the bankruptcy and everything else. It was probably time for a new set of eyes in Arizona. But, yeah, you've got to think he gets another job at some point.
Yeah, goodness
just
gracious.
Look at the return he got for Yandel. I mean, if nothing, I mean, the picks aside, I mean, getting Duclair for Yandel alone, and if any of those picks wind up being, you know, being core assets, I mean, that's going to be, it's already going to be a great trade for them, but that could be a windfall.
Yeah, there's more to come out of that trade.
I know, they from this past draft, it was, they got the final fruits of the labor, if you will. They got, they had the Rangers' first round pick.
And
the year before, they had the Rangers' second round pick.
Right. But then don't forget, dude, he brought in Hall of Famer Chris Pronger to really anchor down that blue line. Come on now.
Come on now. Well, they have Datsuk and
Stanley Cup champion.
On the
Cap. And Datsuk, right? And brought in Pavel Datsuk.
So that's like
heck of a deal.
And they have $12.5 million on the cap this year for those two guys that come off at the end of the year.
Wow. I don't like that at all, by the way. I don't know if you could tell if that was sarcasm or not, everybody, but that something in the CBA has to be done where you can't just, you know, if you're done, you're done. Come on. That's I think Mark Savard got his rights traded down to Florida too, and I'd be bad. I'd feel bad if that guy ever played again because he got his lights put out. And you know, I follow him on Twitter, and he still has good days and bad days where the bright lights and the loud sounds bother him. And just to move money around like that to and really, let's call it, circumvent the cap. Wouldn't you be more served with $12 million in players than $12 million in dead roster space? I don't get the plan there.
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, that Datsuk, you know, that Datsuk trade got you Jacob Chychrun, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think the Red Wings are going to regret not picking Jacob Chychrun.
I guess time will tell.
They really might. I mean, that's a whole other topic, the Red Wings.
Yeah. Well, we've been here half an hour, so I got to let you run, sir. You guys can follow Ian Reed at iReedPucknology on Twitter, and go to Last Word on Sports if you know, Sharks fan, NHL news content. Real good writer over at Last Word on Sports, and really, Chris was telling me I should be calling it lastwordonhockey.com because that's really where it ends up when you redirect to the site. So my apologies on that, but sir, appreciate you coming. We had a Sharks fan, Islanders fan, and a Kings fan, and we just spent 35 minutes talking about the Oilers and the Coyotes. So all is right with the young guns in hockey. I'm amazed at the watching the next 2 years, the explosion of youth across this league. It's going to be something that we've never seen before in the National Hockey League. One last little thought is, it you think that it's, and I heard someone on the radio today talking about this, and it really struck a chord with me. A lot of the reason that these kids are able to come up and play, yes, they can skate, yes, they're skilled, yes, they work out year round now, and they're in shape through the summer coming into camp. But is it, you see any correlation between the instigator rule and the lack of let's say goons that are going to clean a rookie's clock consistently night in, night out? Is, you know, 20 years ago, a 19-year-old kid in the NHL is going to get stood up at center ice repeatedly. And now there's not so much of that. You think there's any correlation to this much young talent being able to crack into the league at that young of an age between that and the instigators and the other things the league has done to get rid of the fighting element of the game?
I don't think it's the instigator so much that's the cause of this. I think it's basically when they put in the obstruction rules and they basically said, okay, defensemen can't, you know, jet ski on a forward into the zone anymore.
Right.
And I think that it's allowed more of the skilled players to come in. I think that the game too is probably a little bit overcoached, but I mean, these kids now in the OHL, the, you know, the NCAA, they're all, you know, they have these systems put in them at that young age. So I think it's just it's more of a skill game. You need to be able to skate. You need to be able to play. And you know, where a guy used to be able to get in just by by beating people up. I mean, I don't think it's the instigator rule it's caused. I think it's just the change in the skill of the game itself that has had more of an impact on that.
Okay, that's a good point. Well, Ian, I'll let you go, but later on in the season, we'll have you back and we'll hit your home base up and talk a little Sharks hockey, see where they are about halfway through the season. If you
Sounds
want to come
great.
Back up, we'd love to have you.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you, sir. All right, that was Ian Reid joining us on the Vegas Hockey Podcast Hotline there as our featured guest this week. He is at iReid. Pucknology on Twitter, and you can always find his stuff on thelastwordonhockey.com too. Kind of put him on the spot talking Oilers Coyotes, but he had his stuff together.
Yes, sir, he did, and I kind of agree with him. I have a lot of young players to be excited about, but I really like the future of Arizona a lot more than Edmonton. I think Edmonton needs to get deeper, believe it or not. It's going to be a big focus. Obviously, they have the killer superstar in Connor McDavid, so that's a big leg up. And hopefully for their sake, Cam Talbot can be a number one goalie. And they have other pieces too, but there's not a lot coming through the pipeline where it seems like Arizona is just loaded. So there's still a lot of work to be done in Edmonton.
Well, they've got... Phoenix, I'm speaking of, has a couple real good defense prospects that didn't even make the team this year. They brought in Luke Shen and Jamie McBain from the Kings, which you know I'm always big on what Stanley Cups and championship pedigrees do to locker rooms. That's one of the things I look for, and I know Luke Shen was only there a short time, but he did fit a role there, and he did. Become more of a reliable stay-at-home defenseman than he had been previously in his career. And McBain does have a Stanley Cup ring. And I know he was a third liner and a scratch, but just being around that culture and taking that into the locker room with all the young guys they do have coming up in Phoenix can't be anything but a plus. And also bringing in Goligoski for that blue line to take some of the load off Ekman-Larsson and... you know, coming off Dallas's run there deep into the playoffs last year, that is going to help the young group. Those three players on the defensive side of things are probably going to instill a little bit more responsibility. And let's face it, Ekman-Larsson's been out there flapping by himself for a long time. I'd love to look forward to what he's going to be doing with a little bit of the workload, if you will, taken off of his shoulders to some other kind of responsible defenseman there on the blue line with him. And I agree with him that the Oilers are probably short-term a little bit more competitive, but I think by next season, I think the Coyotes are going to make a big leap up into the stand. You know, I've been high on the Coyotes pipeline for quite some time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, all right, Chris, what do we have coming up next week and down the pipeline here, sir?
Well, we have another first-time guest. We're trying to blend in some new first-time guests we've talked about over the summer, as well as bring back the guests we had last year. Philip Ivor is going to come on, talk some Winnipeg Jets, a lot of interesting storylines there, Patrick Laine, the Jacob Trouba saga. Philip Ivor's got a pretty good resume going on. He's the managing editor at Arctic Ice. He doesn't do one but two Winnipeg Jets podcasts, the AIH 20416, which I happened to be a guest on last year prior to the Islanders-Panthers series, and the AIH Superfans. And if that wasn't enough, he also writes for Elite Prospects. So, we could even talk a little prospects with him as well. So Winnipeg Jets, I don't think it's the team we had someone on from last year. So I'm excited to have him on. He'll be an excellent guest. So I'm looking forward to that show as well. And we got some things kicking around. I've been on going back and forth on social media with Jillian Fisher. She'll be on the show probably looking like at some time in January, and we're hoping to have a couple other people on in the near future as well. A couple of guests that we've had on the show before. So yeah, so we're always working two or three shows ahead, trying to have the guests in line, if you will. So a lot of good things coming to the show.
Yep. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Make sure you follow us on SoundCloud. Our iTunes feed is a little bit wonky. I've been getting some tweets and emails that our iTunes feed is not updating with new episodes as we post them. It's taking them a while, so I'm trying to work on that. You can always find us on the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. They have a nice group of podcasts over there. They've got the Boston Bruins podcast. They have Buffalo Sabres podcast. Dan is hosting the Bolts Report over there. So, as long with the Vegas Hockey Podcast. So make sure, you know, if you're looking for some good hockey content, there's a few good podcasts at thehockeywriters.com too. So check us out there. For this week, we're done. For Chris, I'm Mark. And we're gone.